10, enforcement program update. Deputy Chief. Stan, are you doing it, or is Mike?
Little tag team.
Okay. He was nervous, so. Mr. Chair, members of the commission, for the record, I'm Mike Sensi, Deputy Chief Enforcement Program, and with me today is Captain Dan Chadwick, who oversees Region 6. And I just wanted to introduce the topic a little bit, provide a little context. So our commanders get together once a year, well, more often than that, but once a year, we review what we accomplished and we think about why it mattered. And the commander, basically in a comstat type setting, presents in front of the group. And our last two sessions have involved all supervisory staff, sergeants as well as lieutenants and captains, so that everybody can see how we're measuring our successes, how we're evaluating our progress, and has also an understanding of how individual contributions benefit not just perhaps a specific problem relative to a specific area, but also how maybe problem solving or some progress in an area affected everybody in a positive way. And so it just occurred to me, as the captains were taking their turns on the stage and reviewing their accomplishments of the year, that maybe we ought to get before the commission and just give you guys a snapshot with respect to the unique enforcement aspects of each of our respective regions. So this truly is a snapshot. I mean, it's 25 minutes, well, less than that now, Captain, sorry. But hopefully you come away as we progress through the regions over the course of the next 6 months with a better sense of what it is, what kind of challenges our staff are facing from the enforcement perspective in their respective regions.
Okay, well, thank you. This is my first time in front of the commission, so again, my name is Dan Chadwick, Captain of Region 6, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. Just a little bit about myself. I've been with the department for 16 years. I grew up in Whatcom County. And prior to coming to the department, I was a deputy for a few years until I begged the department to hire me on. So here I am since 2000 and haven't looked back. So we'll go through Region 6. When you think of Region 6, you start thinking about the towns in Region 6 and Westport, Ilwaco, Port Townsend. But it really takes a map to really grasp how big the region is. And this map shows you, highlighted in green, what Region 6 takes in. And the red stars are the officers where they're deployed. The black stars are the sergeants. And there's 5 detachments and 20 officers right now in charge of enforcing this vast area. If you just look at the land mass, that's enough on its own. But then you take into account that we are required or obligated to patrol out to 200 miles offshore, take in the lower Columbia River, which is heating up right now as everybody's taking off down to Buoy 10, the Strait of Juan de Fuca and Puget Sound. It's a huge responsibility for our officers, and to do this with 20 officers is quite a challenge. So I just wanted to show you this map and kind of get a idea of what we're looking at and what we're up against. But with the limited resources we have, our officers are doing a good job. We have a good group of officers out there in the region, and they're doing what they can with the resources available to them. So I'm proud of the accomplishments they've achieved. Last year we did a reorganization of Region 6 with the disbanding of the Marine unit. We used to have a Marine unit with a captain in charge of it. And working with budgets and whatnot, the decision was made to go all-encompassing and have all the officers do everything. And with that comes some complexities as far as retaining that subject matter expertise that's required of commercial fisheries. And And so that's a challenge moving forward, too, is trying to take somebody who's worked mainly land issues and bringing them into the commercial fold and all the challenges that Region 6 has. If you think about it, all of the fish product moves through Region 6, through the borders, through our coast, through the strait, down from Alaska into the strait, and we have 20 officers to monitor that. Through the reorganization, we had Sergeant Tony Leonetti. He's a new sergeant. He took over my sergeant position when I promoted to captain down along the mouth of the Columbia. He takes in Wakayakum and Pacific counties. Sergeant Rosenberger was an officer in Anacortes, recently promoted to the Port Townsend station, so he supervises Clallam and Jefferson counties. Sergeant Fairbanks isn't really new to the region. He was longtime officer out in Forks and caused us a little bit of trouble because he was so good out there with the community. They're begging for somebody to stay there again, and it's been a challenge to keep an officer there. May not be the challenge to keep the officer there, but you know, with a spouse or a family, trying to keep them out there on the coast for any extended period of time has been a challenge. So anyway, Sergeant Fairbanks promoted to sergeant and he took the Skagit County position and just recently lateraled back into Region 6. So we have him again, but he's in Thurston and Mason counties. And then Sergeant Alexander has been in Grays Harbor his whole career, and now he's the sergeant there, and he just took on Westport commercial side of things. So he's drinking from a fire hose, if you will, right now, but he's doing a good job. And then Sergeant Ted Jackson's been in the Kitsap Pierce County area for nearly 20 years. So in Region 6, like I said, we have both land and marine issues. We have, and a lot of them. I think arguably Region 6 probably has the most diversity of any region in the state. If you take a look back up that map and think about all the recreational, commercial fishing, big blocky national forest land we have there in the Olympic Peninsula. And then you get into Puget Sound and all the gooey duck and shellfish, sanitary shellfish. It is just a diverse region and takes a lot of subject matter expertise. But we have a lot of land issues. One of the pictures here on the left, it shows a case that was conducted by Officer Jeff Summit, and this was showcased on our show Rugged Justice. Bear baiting that turned into multiple illegal bears killed. We did two search warrants that night simultaneously and ended up with a truckload of evidence, so seized a gun. So he did a very good job with that. And then on the right, again, picture depicting the marine issues we have. This picture was off of our north coast this last year. We heard earlier today about halibut fishing, and that's a big part of what we do on the north coast there. And we hope for days like this out there on patrol, but we don't always get them. Region 6 has 13 federally recognized tribes that our officers work with, and we have a law enforcement advisory group that Puget Sound Law Enforcement Advisory Group that was established that helps us connect with the tribes and in their law enforcement agencies, and we work joint patrols with them. We go on their vessels, they come on our vessels, and we make cases together. So we're trying to keep that relationship moving along. You know, this ocean's a big ocean out there, and there's lines drawn all over it, but you can't see them. They're on your plotter, but out there you can't see them. So, again, our officers are tasked with knowing where the usual and custom lines are, where all the rockfish conservation area lines are. Up on the north coast, we have a C-shaped closure. Again, you drive out in the ocean, it's just a big blue piece of water, but there is a lot going on out there that our officers have to be aware of. And we took our 56-foot patrol boat up the coast this last year to help with the halibut fishery, just because we need more people to do that. That is a high-volume, high-participating fishery. And we ran across this vessel who had laid a long line 5 miles south of their area that they could fish. They were in a closed area, and so our officers boarded this boat and watched them release over 300 halibut and black cod back into the ocean. So that was a case that they made just this last May. You know, on the west coast, we have the largest port out there. It's Westport. And in 2014, Westport, Washington had the highest landing value in the entire West Coast, California, Oregon combined, with over $64 million landed in that port. So it's an active port. And to remind you again, we have two officers there right now. Back at merger, I believe we had 12 fisheries patrol officers in that port, and we're dealing with two officers to handle this. Granted, we make phone calls, just as this picture here. And again, I mentioned our officers do what they can with what resources they have. Here's an officer coming back for some training. This last winter, our crab fishery's taken off. He knows that crab landings are happening. He thinks, okay, training's not the only thing I need to be doing. I need to stop in Westport at 10 o'clock at night. I have dinner waiting for me, but I'm going to go check. And he pulls in, and there's a notorious violator unloading his first load of the season, which is nearly 90,000 pounds of crab. It's pouring rain, and he starts measuring crab and finding a lot of undersized crab. So there he is. He makes a phone call to me, talks through it, and I grab Officer Dillman. We run up. We get there 1 in the morning. Here's Officer Welter, soaking wet, shivering, and I'm like, what are you doing measuring crab out in the rain? And he says, Cap, I got to keep an eye on the boat. I got to measure crab. I got to know where the totes are. And so one officer's pretty tough. And as a result, I sent him home, told him to go get a shower and some sleep. Officer Dielman and I measured crab till the sun came up. And at the end, there was extrapolated out, there was 25,000 pounds of undersized crab in that load, equating to just over $7,000. So that officer's tenacity.
I have a question.
Sir.
So what does that equate to? Is one undersized crab a violation, or does it take 25,000 pounds of them to be a violation, or how does it work?
Well, there's tolerances. Thank you for the question. There's tolerances that officers have to understand in the commercial business. So letter of the law, one undersized crab is a violation. Are we going to ticket somebody for that? No, we're not. We're going to take into account their violation history, and in the commercial sector, we look at those tolerances, and there's quite a bit to it. But the officer, a brand new officer, he needs to know that where those tolerances are at, and he has to use his resources to understand that.
This morning, under public comment, we had two commercial crabbers in the audience, one of which that spoke that they have a lot of difficulty with their crew determining legal crab. I don't truly understand that. I've done a little crabbing in my day. It's pretty easy to check an undersized crab. What is the difficulty with the crew being trained to know a legal versus an illegal crab?
Well, thank you again. I know quite a few crew members. I did some commercial fishing, to pay my way through college, and has a lot to do with the boss of the boat. If you don't want undersized crab on a boat, you're not going to have undersized crab on a boat. It's as easy as that. And I've had talked to a lot of crews about that, and so it all comes down to oversight from the skippers. So. We rely heavily on our joint enforcement agreement with NOAA. Right now, they're funding just right around $1 million, and it equates for about 8 of our FTEs. So we have executable priorities now that we have to show what kind of work performance we're doing for that money, and it's a big part of our enforcement program. Region 6 has a big chunk of that. This case here, I didn't even realize it at the time, but this is the same guy that delivered the 90,000 pounds of crab. And this case right here was a couple years ago, but our officers went 20 miles offshore. Officer Pat Anderson and Officer Brett Hopkins, now Detective Brett Hopkins, they board this boat 20 miles offshore. The same skipper is actually running the block as this long line's coming over. And by the time they were done, they found 60 undersized halibut on this boat. And they escorted them in, and these officers are in there trying to measure fish, all along, there's about $45,000 worth of halibut on this boat. And so this crew's down there with knives running around trying to gut all these fish and whatnot, and these officers are trying to do their job and try to preserve product at the same time, and it was pretty chaotic, but they did a good job and saved a lot of resource in this case. And I'm going to be bringing this example back up in one of my later slides, so remember it. I'll be talking about that in just a minute, sir, if you can hang on.
You're probably going to get madder then.
To do our job with the limited resources we have, we rely heavily on our partners. And this last year, and every year since I've been here, we've used the Coast Guard quite a bit off our coast inside Puget Sound. It's pretty nice when you can call up Air Station Astoria and you're on a helicopter in 20 minutes or a small boat out of Cape Disappointment or Grays Harbor up in Port Angeles. Coast Guard has been fantastic helping us out when we've needed it. NOAA Office of Law Enforcement, the tribes, and our general law enforcement police partners, sheriffs and police officers, are ready to come and back us up whenever we need the help. So Region 6 has a couple hot spots right now that our officers have had to deal with, Victor Access and Point No Point. Victor Access is in North Bay. It's a great shellfish area. And in 2013, we looked to expand this access site, and a couple neighbors did not like that, so they petitioned to kind of stop progress, and we entered into a settlement agreement with them. But as a result of that settlement, on high use, this access or this shellfish site is only open 2 months a year, because of the issues we had here with neighbors and concerned about trespass and everything. So 2 months a year this is open, and our officers are required to be there on high use days, on weekends, holidays, and when the tide's low, minus 0.2 or lower. But they can't do any resource protection or very limited resource protection because they're doing traffic control and neighborhood patrol, if you will. That's along Highway 302 outside of Allen, and there's no shoulder to park on, and they just, I don't know how an accident hasn't happened so far, but the officers are out there making sure that people are moving on. There's only 23 parking lots in that area, and there's probably quadruple the amount of people that want to get in there. And then they're mad at us because we're waving them on because you don't want to see them get hit by a car as they're coming down to pull into this access site. And they just want to ask a question, and then our officers get complaints because they had to get assertive and tell them, get the heck out of the way or you're going to get hit. So it's been something that Region 6 has had to deal with enforcement-wise for the last 3 years. This is the end of the contract or the settlement agreement, so we'll be having to deal with these issues here coming up. Point No Point's a beautiful place. I don't know if anybody's been up there. It's at the top of the Kitsap Peninsula. We purchased the land, made it into an access site right now. It was supposed to have a boat ramp put into it, but that stalled, and we all know that. Again, some neighborhood issues there of people, the public, trying to go up into their yard and use their water and whatnot. So I've been getting a lot of weekend phone calls from the landowners up there trying to help mitigate that, and our officers have been doing a good job trying to stay up there and keep the peace, if you will. Again, as I mentioned, Region 6 is a large shellfish growing area. We have 38 patrol areas that were mandated by the NSSP to patrol, and we have to do this twice in a 30-day period. So 76 times in a 30-day period our officers are having to patrol these areas, and if we don't fulfill that mandate, then our shellfish exports could be embargoed and shut things down. So it's quite a bit of time our officers are having to spend to make sure that we do these patrols. Part of my duties as a captain is going down to the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. I sit on the Enforcement Advisories Committee. I took over for the deputy chief here, some big shoes to fill, and I'm still growing into them. But one of the neat things about being down there at the council, it's 5 weeks a year. You're down there with Oregon, Washington, and California law enforcement, as well as NOAA and and the Coast Guard. And so we have a time to network with them and share ideas and whatnot. Something that's popped up here and goes along with what the director was wanting to do here, simplify regulations. I've identified down on the Columbia River, you know, we manage our salmon fisheries along the Columbia with a compact and then the north of Falcon process. But I realized our sport bottom fish limits down there in the Columbia River are different between Oregon and Washington. And up off the Washington coast, that's a sandbox. There's not many places to fish for rockfish. There's a couple, but most of the time you're going down into Oregon. And so my example is Oregon has a 7 rockfish limit and Washington has a 10 rockfish limit. But that area of the Columbia River, you're funneling Washington and Oregon residents out of there, and a Washington resident's going down into Oregon, and if he's not paying, he or she's not paying attention to the limits in Oregon, they're going to be getting a ticket. So trying to raise the issue here and see if we can't get to some common ground of marrying up the regulations so we don't have those issues. The captains on the west side of the state got together and we met with biologists and we made sure our officers are aware of the ESA-listed fish and river systems and the time of year that they're in there. And so all the captains put together their lists and have it with the officers so they know when and where to patrol for ESA-listed species. This is just an example. We also added the Puget Sound ESA-listed species here. So electronic fish tickets are moving. We're trying to get that going and off the ground. On the coast, the ground fish is all landed by electronic fish tickets. Sable fish is soon to follow here through the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. And with a little luck, we'll keep pushing this along and get crab, salmon, and everything in the state landed on electronic fish tickets. So that's moving along. Go ahead.
I was just going to add, I think I said a few words at some commission meeting not too long ago about our porous paper system and how it's a very dated system, easily taken advantage of. And the groundfish trawl fishery, which has been rationalized for some time now, is mandated to use this electronic system. That's being expanded. Regional Director Culver and staff understand that sable fish caught off the coast will have to be accounted for with this system, and we'd like to go beyond that. It's not that you can't still cheat with respect to catch accounting using an electronic system, but it's harder and there's a breadcrumb trail versus, oh, I forgot to turn in 1,000 paper fish receiving tickets accounting for 200,000 pounds of X, and you weren't aware of it until you came to my business and stumbled across the problem or served a search warrant and discovered it that way. So this is, there are a lot of moving parts to implementing this sort of a system and making sure that not only does it work mechanically, but it's enforceable and it meets the enforcement needs along with the fish management needs. But it's so much more efficient for our businesses when they have the capability to go electronic. Then stuff all your fish receiving tickets in an envelope. I don't know what it costs to mail an item these days, but you get the picture.
You know, the other thing with electronic fish tickets that's handy for our officers is our trucks now are an office. We have printers. We have our computer systems. We're hooked up electronically. To be able to go in to a system and pull up a fish ticket real time and understand the information that we're needing to gather, it's huge. So this, we're really looking forward to this process moving forward. So to answer your question, why wasn't that one fisherman revoked? And this is a project we're trying to finish up, and that case really spurred it along was this revocation process. The law's in place. We just have failed as a department to get it put in place. And so we're feverishly trying to do that. And so some steps we've taken, we've contacted license holders. It's all part of the law here, the process. We've contacted some license holders who are willing to sit on the review committee. We're going to be providing this packet to the commission and getting it approved, hopefully having you approve this. And so there's a few more steps we need to take. We need to finish up the draft Roberts Rules of Order on the committee guidance, but we're getting closer. So that's why he's not revoked.
So when can we look for it?
I hope soon.
Soon.
Is that a good enough answer? I hope so. Yes, sir. One neat thing with our officers, or especially our younger officers, is their forward thinking. They're just tenacious. Well, with the passage of I-1401, putting this initiative in enforcement's lap, the officer thought it was a great opportunity to go after a wildlife sniffing dog. And so working with, she approached me and she said, "Hey, Captain, can I put this project together?" I said, "Fantastic, yeah, put it together." And so I let the deputy chief know she was doing that. She put this great project together, and the deputy chief here had been working on another part of this project with the canine working dogs for conservation, and is working on a grant right now that's getting close to coming together. So I just wanted to bring this up to the commission and let them know that we're working on steps to tackle I-1401, and this project not only benefits Region 6 but the state, the entire state. So if we could get a grant to try this out and go into the ports of Seattle and Tacoma and all that, it's just an example of an officer, you know, looking ahead. So the Kitsap and Long Beach are always full of bear problems. And we had some pretty high-profile bear incidents that have occurred down in Long Beach that I was involved in. And I'm sitting there with my family one day at the Long Beach Loyalty Day Parade thinking, how can I connect with these people? How can we get the message out to stop feeding the bears? And so this is what we did this last year, and in the Loyalty Days Parade, we towed our tip trailer. I'm sure you're all familiar with the tip trailer. And one of the officers went down and worked with the local garbage company, who donated a 300-gallon trash can, and he put together this display with our decoy bear. So we put a bunch of garbage around this bear, and we partnered with the wildlife program, who made a banner and helped in the parade. They made a banner for us: don't feed the bears, you know, put your trash away. And it was just a good way to reach a lot of the public down there. And shoot, the judges gave us first place for our efforts. I got an argument with them. I said, give that to somebody else. We're just the a public agency wanting to get the message out. And she said, "Oh no, you're getting first place." So yes, ma'am. The other thing we did in that parade too was we handed out Bear Beware flyers as fast as we could. We handed out well over 100 in a short amount of time, and it was just a great event. So it's something good. I know the commission's heard about Youth Outdoor Unlimited. And this last year, Sergeant Alexander worked with the wildlife program out of Region 6, and they put together this antlerless elk hunt for this terminally ill a girl, and she was able to successfully harvest this cow elk. And then while she was there, we also had an orphan bear that she was part of the capture with. So it was a good program, a good day for her and good day for all of us. I'm very thankful for the department to send me to this law enforcement academy, the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs, also known as NACLEC. Has sent now Deputy Chief Hobbs and myself back to West Virginia for, it's a 3-week course, and it's a chance for us to go down there and be with, you know, I was down there with 37 leaders from 31 different states, and it was the first training I've been to where everybody wants to be there, they all have the same mindset, and you get a lot out of it. So it was an excellent training, and hopefully we can, between Deputy Chief Hobbs and whoever's going next, hopefully we can bring some of this adaptive leadership back to our state. You know, it's nice right now. We're on email with those guys back in Florida, Maryland, all over.
and they're dealing with the same problems. When we first came to class, they put up the white piece of paper and asked this question: when you think of conservation law enforcement, what concerns you the most? Somebody immediately spouted out relevancy. How are we going to remain relevant in the coming years? And then funding. So, again, I appreciate the department sending the leaders to that. So that's the quick. I think hopefully I made it with my time allotment. But I also want to thank you for supporting the youth hunt. This was last year. My 12-year-old drew one of those youth tags, and pretty proud dad.
The thing I don't understand, Dan, is it's always sunny down there where you are.
You see my face?
It's no, not very
it's
well.
Burnt all the time.
just a comment, Chief Sensi. I know Officer Klump in our region pretty well. And he attended a youth fishing event last month, and we were able to chat, and he was very excited about a program, a training program that had taken place earlier this spring. That's, I think, a kind of a new wrinkle in your activity in terms of drunk while boating, and I'm not sure if I've got the terminology. I know you have a terminology for that. But I'm not sure if the commission is aware of the efforts that you've made in that direction.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, we've always been engaged in boating safety. As part of the general fund side of the house for us. We do receive some funding from state parks, given that we have the greatest law enforcement presence on the water and the largest fleet of vessels. And, we do with this agency is famous for getting a lot done with very little, and because of folks like Sergeant Klump that see the big picture, we've been able to really make the most out of the programs we're engaged in, and make sure that we have a big footprint. And so we, through the funding that we received, have emphasized our presence during high boater use times, and then sort of perfected a BUI message so that we can get the word out to the public that boating while intoxicated isn't any different than driving a motor vehicle on a highway. You still have a significant public safety issue there. And we partnered with some other organizations to try to enhance what we received and the mission that we already have. So, for example, Traffic Safety Commission had a $1.4 million campaign, I think I have that number right, to reduce accidents, deaths on the highway. And so we dovetailed into that. They were kind enough to allow us to leverage their marketing campaign to do a BUI-DUI piece. So if you hear Don't Sail Your Way to Jail, that came out of Officer Jake Greshock thinking in trying to come up with a slogan that informed people that, hey, this is drunk driving, regardless of whether it's a vehicle or a vessel. And we have Seafair this weekend. In fact, after this, I'm headed to Seafair to work with our folks during that event, where we provide four patrol boats, and the local jurisdictions really count on the Department of Fish and Wildlife's presence there to maintain order and ensure public safety. So does it have anything to do with natural resource protection? Well, no, Seafair doesn't. But I think we have a public safety obligation that we need to fulfill. But oftentimes, boating safety goes in hand with a lot of the outdoor activities that our stakeholders are engaged in, and they really appreciate it when we help make safer waterways. So it's not a new program, but it's enhanced, and it's because of folks like Sergeant Dan Klump that were able to actually increase our profile there
and at the end of the day, the agency's relevance.
Well, I just wanted to say how fortunate we are to have officers of your quality. Dan, that was a fabulous job for your first performance before the commission. Excellent. But both of you have just brought so much to improvement in the department's enforcement program over the years because of your dedication, commitment to the resources. So I want to thank you, publicly acknowledge that.
Thank you.
And I appreciated the some of the detail that you provided in this presentation, making the point that about how difficult it is to enforce when there's only one of you there to keep track of the offloading of product in Westport, for example, and how there used to be 12 officers doing the same kind of task. That's really good, vivid detail, and I think that communicates a lot because it's so hard for people, the general public, to understand the costs of the reduction in the budgets. So that was really good. But I did want to bring up, too, that I share some reservations about the decision that was made to amalgamate all enforcement in everybody rather than keeping a Marine detachment. I hope we keep that under review because the specialization and knowledge is really crucial when you're doing enforcement, when you're planning investigations. You really have to know quite a bit about the background of people involved in the industry, where things happen. There's a lot of expertise, and I hope we don't dilute that by asking everybody to do everything. I just hope we keep that under review and keep figuring out whether that's working, because I really was questioning whether that was a good idea.
Mr. Chair, I know we're running over, but I'm not going to sleep well at night if I don't get something off my chest. Earlier, the public testimony piece came up relative deckhands and their accountability on vessels, and I think the captain did a good job answering that. I want to point out that the majority of our commercial fleet is very law-abiding. But in order to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, we do have to have the subject matter expertise to not only understand when someone's blowing smoke, but also what the appropriate level of tolerance it should be, because commercial fishing is very challenging and mistakes are made. Good people make mistakes, and it's just the way it is. There was no ill intent, but they have some very challenging conditions to address, to deal with, and you have to have someone that understands the difference between the letter of the law, the spirit of the law, and then all these competing, all these environmental conditions and conditions that come with commercial fishing industry that might have an effect on a particular moment or a person's situation in terms of a violation. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We'll take a